Live from NYU. This is Rebooting the News with Jay Rosen.
Hi, Dave. Welcome back to our studio.
Thanks, Jay.
We actually missed our podcast last week.
Yes, because I had a bad cold, which I still have.
Because you had a bad cold, but we're going to make up for it with an extra interesting one this week.
We hope.
And we have a way to start off, which is we have an announcement that was made between the last time we did Rebooting the News and today.
Ta-da! Yeah. Let's go. Make your announcement, Jay.
Well, it's at my blog, PressThink, that NYU and the New York Times are going to be collaborating on a startup, a local news site for the East Village neighborhood in which our offices are located and many of our students live. And we are going to produce the content for this site. It will run on newyorktimes.com. It will be an version of their local neighborhood blogging initiative called The Local. They have one in Brooklyn. They have another one in New Jersey. This will be the third, but it's a little different in that we're designing it. We're building it from scratch. We're doing it on their WordPress blogging platform. It will have an editor who is a faculty member at NYU, a former New York Times reporter named Rich Jones, who I have a lot of confidence in. And it will be overseen by editors at the New York Times, but produced at NYU. My students, the students in my Studio 20 program, who have been drawn to NYU to study innovation in journalism, are the incubation team working on this site. They meet every week in my class, which is called Studio, to chart progress and divide up the tasks and figure out how this thing can work. And it's going to be sustained as a local reporting laboratory by other sections of the NYU journalism program. So I've been working on this for a long time.
How long?
Over about a year.
Really?
Yeah.
How did it get started? Where did the idea come from?
It started when I read in the New York Times about these new sites, the locals.
Mm-hmm.
And CUNY students and Columbia students were going to be involved sort of as interns at them.
Mm-hmm.
NYU was not a part of the initial initial announcement. And when I saw what they were doing and why, it became clear that they were doing this in order to learn about a level of journalism, the community blogging level, that they didn't actually know much about because it wasn't something they had been doing before. And so since they were doing it to learn, I felt, well, we could certainly help them with that agenda. And so Jason Samuels and myself, who is my colleague in Studio 20, went to see Jonathan Landman, who at the time was sort of the head of the digital side of the New York Times newsroom,
mm-hmm.
and Jim Schachter, who is the editor for digital initiatives. And we proposed this project where NYU and the New York Times would collaborate in the production of a local news site for the East Village. And what I liked about it was that it brings into the equation all the problems of being part of the community that you are also reporting on. And it brings both blogging and its discipline and traditional reporting and New York Times journalism and that discipline
mm-hmm.
together and provides an ideal way for students in my program, but also students in the rest of the NYU program, to learn about online journalism, learn about blogging,
So when does this start? When will the site go live?
We don't have an exact launch date, but it will be sometime in 2010 when we feel we have a good enough plan and a way to produce a decent flow of content.
Mm-hmm.
It may be in the spring, it may be in the summer. The latest it would be September. But it'll certainly be up and going by the fall of this year. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the most interesting thing about it, Dave, is that we're not trying to create here a replicable site that you could just pick up and plop down in some other neighborhood or some other community and have it kind of run as a model. That's not our aspiration at all. Instead, we're trying to take this unique community of the East Village, which is an historic place, a very culturally significant neighborhood, and put a lot of resources into making it perhaps one of the best covered neighborhoods in New York, bring a lot of talent and energy from around NYU, not just in journalism, but other programs, and try to make kind of a demonstration project out of it to show how good truly local journalism can be.
But you don't mean this to radiate out of NYU. You want to incorporate the community in this, correct? Or
a big part of it is not only incorporating the community, but making the community at least half of the source of all the content.
Because the community is the persistent part. The students are transient. They come and go.
That's right.
And so the community is what's going to... You know, it's funny, the two phrases that you said were the two that I have written down here, history and cultural significance. You know, the East Village, more than any of the other areas that you talked about. You know, I was in New York in towards the tail end of the cultural significance period of the East Village and heavily influenced by it. I went to the Fillmore East a number of times. I don't want to tell you what else I did down in this neighborhood, but...
Allen Ginsberg is for many years as a resident of the East Village.
Oh, no. You could see it in the Delta. I moved from here to New Orleans, where I went to college, and the cultural difference between New York in the early 70s and a city like New Orleans in the early 70s, you could totally see that much like parts of California today are cultural, you know, leaders. At that time, the center of American culture, for like it better or worse, was the East Village. Mm-hmm. And no longer true. However, many of the people are still alive. They may not be in the East Village anymore, but it's a fascinating story. It would be like waking up to cover the Civil War in the 1920s, when you'd find that there still would be a lot of people around that remembered the Civil War. Same thing's true today about the East Village. I read an article in one of the East Village blogs the other day about how there was a Ratner's right next to... Ratner's was a dairy restaurant, and I didn't know that there were two. I always thought there was just one on Delancey Street. Turns out there was one on Second Avenue right next to where the Fillmore was.
Oh, really?
Yes. And so I went down there the other day just to sort of look to see what I could find of the remains of the Fillmore. I couldn't find anything. It was
all gone.
It was like going to see the Berlin Wall. You know, there's just nothing left of it.
Right.
But the memory certainly is.
But the echo in American culture is still there.
Unbelievable.
And then when you fast forward a little bit to punk and new wave music in the 70s, the East Village was ground zero.
It may be ground zero again.
And it may be ground zero again. So,
but you know what the community says, that NYU may be the reason why it's not ground zero.
Yeah, NYU.
Because NYU has sort of grown to subsume. So this is why it's an interesting story emanating or not out of NYU, right?
NYU is a major force within the community. It is not always the most popular institution. There's a lot of resentment about it. It's looking east as it tries to grow. All these big universities, Harvard, University of Chicago, Penn in Philadelphia, they all need to grow, and they have tension with their communities, and this is where that's happening.
When I was at Harvard, same thing.
Same thing,
They were growing into a whole town. They're going to build a new campus. And
Columbia with Upper West Side, the same thing. So
you know, Jay, what the first question that came up when this was announced, and you know, of course, I'm associated with this project in a peripheral way
as an
advisor. The first question I got came from a guy named Jim Posner, a guy who I know from Twitter and from blogging and so forth. And he asked the question that I don't doubt I would have asked if I had not been part of this project is, what about the paywall? Will this be behind the paywall?
Yeah.
And, you know, this seems like a pretty good question to ask.
It is.
What do you think?
It is, and
maybe you should explain what the paywall story is.
Well, the
about
New York Times announced a couple months ago that it would be moving sometime in 2011 to what it calls a metered system, which means that after a certain number of visits, a web user would be asked to pay for a subscription to the New York Times. If you are already a print subscriber, as I am, you would get free access, of course. But it has decided that it's going to go this route. There are some complications. For example, it also said that if you get to the Times site through a link from another site, like a blog or a service or an aggregator, that this would not be counted against your free visits. Therefore, the gates would remain open. But this is part of the news industry's attempt to recover lost revenues. So one of the media questions when you contemplate the production of a local news blog is whether it would, in fact, be behind this paywall, or whether the Times will, for certain categories of services, make exceptions. And what I can say now is only that I've made my feelings known, and we at NYU have made our feelings known to the New York Times, that we believe this site definitely deserves to be outside the paywall. I think the people working on this with us understand why we say that. The Times has heard many arguments from its own people about what should and should not stand outside the paywall. And they're not ready to make any decisions about it yet. So there's not really that much more to say about it other than the argument, I think, is very strong that a community news site produced in part by the community, as we hope this will be, our aim is for it to be 50% authored by people in the East Village, 50% by NYU, that there are compelling reasons why it should remain outside the paywall. But I think at this point, they're still trying to figure out what they're doing, and there's quite a lot of confusion internally about it. So
I'm bewildered by this.
We'll just have to see.
I feel that there's like a lack of ability to see it from the other guy's perspective. That this would be a perfect case where, you know, I want to be careful about being critical of anybody. But imagine if you were one of the community members and somebody was coming to you and saying, hey, we should write for this blog, you know. Mm-hmm. I by the way, I know this because I had this experience in Berkeley. We had a meeting at the Cal J School with all the local East Bay bloggers. We were doing a site called inberkeley.com, and I can't tell you how much it revolved around how much we were not paying them mm-hmm. to write for, or proposing to not pay them, because mm-hmm. none of them actually were writing for us at the time. And the argument was, well, Dave, you know, you've got a lot of money, you know, and you know, the assumption was you're going to make a lot of money from this,
right?
And we feel like we're working for the man, you know,
right?
And I felt really misunderstood because, you know, if you'd poked into my soul and could read my heart, you would have seen that I never expected to make a dime off this thing. I expected
it would be extremely unlikely.
To lose a fair amount of money on it.
Very difficult to make a lot of money.
Most of the things I do don't make any money.
Right.
I mean, that's just an experience. You know, that's just the way my life goes. I still do them, right?
Me too.
Well, now this is a big difference between NYU and the New York Times, and one sort of cashed out, entrepreneurial whatever it is that I am. I'm nowhere near as big a pile of money as these. So the idea that these organizations would be charging for access to stuff the community was doing for free, it's not going to start. It's not even going to. It would be the rallying cry that they would all use to say this is irrelevant and we need to avoid this. I'm putting that out there. You don't have to respond. I understand the Times hasn't made their decision. I also have stated my own personal belief that by the time it comes to actually turn the switch, they won't do it.
Yeah.
You know, that the
that could be.
You know, the way I look at it is the Times has the best franchise for news on the web. Why would they want to screw with it? I mean, you know, a lot of people would love to have their problem, you know. And definitely, there's got to be a lot of ways to make money doing what they do.
Well, I plan to be fairly open about my views on the paywall question. I don't have any problem making
Would you keep working on it? Let's say they decided to go the other route, put it behind the paywall, and...
I would have to take an experimental attitude towards it and see what happened. I wouldn't want to box myself in either way. I'm comfortable with the uncertainty at the moment, but I definitely plan to make my views known. I'll probably write about it. I think they expect that.
Well, you've made your views known right now.
Yeah, I have. I think it should be outside the paywall. But I should add that we're not expecting all community contributions to flow to us for free. We are actually planning to pay.
Oh, that's an important point.
For not all, but a significant portion of what we get from the community. We're working on a revenue model that I think will allow us to have at least a fund, a war chest, as my colleague Brooke Koger calls it, so that very high-value contributions, things that take time, things that are difficult to do, or the contributions from people who have become regular and reliable contributors, we're hoping to pay for a portion of what's produced from the community. And we're going to be putting resources into this. We're not expecting to make money from it. It would, even if we were, it would be extremely difficult to do so, because actually there is no good revenue model yet strictly for hyperlocal news coverage. The first task, however, isn't that. It's simply to become essential to people in East Village as a news source. That is the first thing.
Is that really, is that the goal?
That's the first goal, is to become an essential news source for people in the East Village, yes.
What, you know, I was thinking, you know, sitting in the class last Wednesday and, you know, puzzling this out. Because whenever I embark on a project, I like to understand what my goals are up front.
Me too.
That way, when I have to make a decision about, you know, a specific thing, I'll be able to say, well, is this going to contribute to X, where X is the goal, right? And that would be a good, you know, if I have an indecision, I'm not sure whether to do something or not, it would be based on that. And so I was thinking about that, you know, what is the goal here? You know, there are certainly several potential. Now, yes. I was pretty sure that the goal wasn't to be profitable, to return dollar value, because neither organization, the New York Times or NYU, need to be thinking in those terms on something as small as this. I mean, you know, and just in terms of the one salary that you've committed full time to this project, that's going to swamp whatever money that's, I think, my impression. So you're not likely to think of that, but maybe another more likely goal would be the education goal. Will this further the education of the students who are involved in this project?
Yes.
I would think that would be fairly high.
It is.
Okay. It might even be number one, but you said it's not. You said number one is to go for engagement with the community.
Yes. Because I think the educational goal will follow from that.
Right. In other words, if you don't get engagement with the community, you have no hope of getting the education for the students.
The education that I want.
Right.
Yes.
Right. I see. And then the students should learn what it takes to attain that engagement.
That's right. Exactly.
And so that will bring in all of the normal things that you would do to build a website as a business, probably, right?
Or as a blogger, starting out, serving a community, whether
Absolutely.
It's a translocal community or community of place.
Translocal is a term I've not heard of yet.
Well, some bloggers serve communities of people who are interested in the subject wherever they are.
Right.
That's translocal. And some serve a
place. That's interesting. What would be the combination of translocal and hyperlocal? In other words, this segues into the next topic. Be a good time to go into that, which is, excuse me. Now, I'm going to do that from time to time, do the coughing, but I think I got that under control. The question is, well, let's say you wanted to tackle the topic of internet access in the borough of Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Now, that's local, right? We're not talking, because Manhattan internet access actually is a different problem from Queens internet access,
yes,
or Brooklyn or New
Long
Jersey.
Island, yes.
Or Long Island, for that matter. And this is something I learned when I was shopping for an apartment in Manhattan for the last few months, which is there aren't many things that I understand better about Manhattan than locals do, than people who've lived here for a long time. But this happens to be one of them, because when I talk about this topic with people who've lived here for some time who are, you know, like haven't moved recently, they don't necessarily think that there's any juice to this, right? But actually, I believe there is. One of the assumptions I made, which turned out to be incorrect, was that I would be able to get Fios if I lived in Manhattan. Why? Because my mother was able to get it at her house in Queens. And having seen it, it actually makes you want to move to New York, Jake. I mean, it's that good.
We have it in my building.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, now you see, this is very interesting.
Isn't it?
Because this goes right along. And, you know, by the way, this, Jay, you'll immediately recognize this as being your atomization argument.
Yeah,
It's an instance of it. And I didn't realize that until I heard your talk, webcast, at TEDx NYED, which I know you weren't happy with your performance there.
I wasn't, yeah.
Well, let me raise my hand and say that I finally understood what you were saying as a result of having listened to the talk. So maybe you should reevaluate the success or failure
Very
of
cool.
it. Right, because you got at least one person. I mean, I've always believed in your philosophy and theories and stuff, but I had never heard it put together so well as I did that then. Okay, so you have Fios in your building, right?
Yes.
I understand from people at Verizon, who I know through Twitter, because I have extra, I have better access than I would as
than
just
the average
a consumer.
Consumer.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I have wear many hats.
Yes.
If I am just the guy who lives on Bleecker Street, I would get no information. But because I happen to know somebody on Twitter who works for Verizon, I hear that they have wire going to my house too.
Mm-hmm.
They have fiber going to my house, my apartment building as well. And so apparently they're on the verge of being able to offer it in a lot of locations in Manhattan. This seems to be, however, they're not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you ask them, tell me where in Manhattan do you have Fios coverage?
They can't tell you.
Well, they won't.
Yeah.
They know.
Yeah.
What they say instead is go to our website and type in your address and we'll tell you whether we have Fios.
Right.
Which is sort of a sneaky way of saying that we know we don't have it where you live.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we don't want to show you the map because it would give it away. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure that's what they're... What
so
this,
let's produce the map.
Well, there you go.
There
okay.
You
There's
go.
Jay Rosen's atomization theory right there.
Right.
Let's produce the map today. Okay? And not just produce the map, but let's understand the phenomenon. Let's put a couple of reporters working on this thing,
That's
not
right.
just gathering the data from, you know, from the aggregate, from what you call the crowd, which is a term I still haven't quite fallen in love with. But let's also get some reporters working the story from the inside to find out
exactly.
what are the realities here. Now, let's go talk to a few superintendents, supers at buildings. Let's talk to some building owners. Let's find out what Time Warner is doing and saying to these people that's keeping Fios out.
That's
you
right.
Because some people, like Fred Wilson, I've been emailing with him on this. He thinks that Time Warner Cable is locked in. And I wrote him back and I said, nah, Fred, I don't think that's true. I think that there are people that would move to a different part of Manhattan if they knew that they could get Fios at the new location.
Well, it'd certainly become a factor in where you want to set yourself
Correct.
Up. Absolutely.
I met somebody at David Galbraith. I was at a party the other night in Soho at Nick Denton's house. And David Galbraith, who I've known for many years, he lives in this neighborhood in, right off the Bowery.
East Village.
East Village. And he described his internet access. And this is a professional. This is a guy like me who like makes his living on the internet, basically. And it was appalling. He says that on the weekends he can't get any work done because everybody's downloading movies on BitTorrent in his neighborhood, and the down rate is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm much better off. I mean, the Time Warner that I have in my building is asymmetric. You know, asymmetric means that I get a phenomenal amount of bandwidth coming down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's as high as 25 megabits, which is huge. I mean, that's very modern. Right. But it's less that's coming down.
Right.
But it's less than 1 megabit going up.
Right, because it's built for consumption, not
well,
for production.
Well, but you see, that's a very out-of-date model because Skype, for example, which has become a very popular application, requires symmetric.
Let's have symmetric.
Yeah, absolutely. And FIDO, of course, is symmetric.
Right.
Now, they don't always install it symmetric, but they always can install it symmetric. And my mother bought asymmetric, right, mm-hmm. because we were being cheap at that moment. Mm-hmm. Well, they went ahead and installed symmetric. That's how nice. I mean, Verizon is trying to make
That's
friends here.
That's a
you know?
Good way of describing a key feature of the rebooted system of news. Yeah. Upload speeds are as fast as download speeds.
Tell me
speeds.
About it. It's, right? Everybody is a source.
Everybody is
go
a
direct.
Source. So let
it's, there's right. a technical implementation of this as well as sort of, you know, this communication with a small C,
right.
which is the wires, and communication with a big C, which is brain to brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the connection between human beings. And
let me try and sum up then this thread.
Sure.
My idea, which I label with this three-word term, audience atomization overcome, is that in the age of mass media, people were connected up
right.
to the Verizons of the world, the New York Times, CNN.
The professors, the reporters.
That's
this
right.
is what Jeff Jarvis was talking about too, right?
Yeah, that yeah, right. Like when you sit in a lecture, you're connected up,
right.
right? But they were not effectively connected across horizontally to each other.
Right.
What's different about today is we're still connected up. We can easily reach whitehouse.gov just over the internet, right? We're still watching news. We still have television. We still have mass media. But at the same time, we're connected across to one another as effectively as we are connected vertically. So for journalism, what this means is that the horizontal sharing networks are as significant as the vertical synthesizing of information. And the future of journalism is in these hybrid forms. And so part of what I'm trying to figure out under the heading of open source journalism or distributed reporting, or some call it crowdsourcing, and then Dave says, I don't like the word crowd, which is fine with me. But we have to figure out how large groups of people can collaborate in information gathering. Like, for example, well, where in the East Village can you actually get FIOS?
Right.
And what's actually available block by block, building by building?
Well,
they
right,
won't tell
we
us,
why
but
we
can
okay,
find out.
Okay,
and wait a second, let me
yeah. No,
tie
we ought
up
to
the
do
thread.
This with the East Village.
Yeah,
right?
We can definitely do this. And the real power is when we can combine these horizontal sharing networks and the aggregated
right.
data with reporters checking it out.
Absolutely.
And getting answers and going to Verizon and saying, well, what about this?
No, Verizon probably would be very happy to cooperate with such a thing. Time Warner probably would not.
Well,
but
we'll
that doesn't
find out.
Matter.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
The data's out there anyway.
So what I talked about at TEDx this weekend was an even more grand vision of how such a thing would work, which is simply a dream project I've had in my head to illustrate the potential of these methods. And that is, what if we could take the 50 best-selling pharmaceuticals around the world and find out how much they cost, what the benefits of them are said to be, and how they are marketed in every country in the world, and put that information together and brought it to the pharmaceutical companies to account for how they actually sell these compounds, which are chemically speaking the same, but are, I guarantee you, sold for different rates and with different benefits around the world. And as a global industry, the pharmaceutical industry has no global accountability. It would be hard to do that in the age of mass media, but it's feasible to do it in the age of decentralized media. So that's my dream project. But we can bring that.
Before you move on, there's a very important point about all of these projects, okay, that I don't want to skip over this, that the elusive business model for journalism is at the core of all of these, okay? This is where you have to put your focus if you want to find the money, right? Because the principle of making money on the internet, and this is, I don't know why this isn't like completely obvious to everybody, okay, is to find where the cash is flowing, right, and facilitate that. when create a place that facilitates the flow of cash, and that's a place where you can put a business model. You can put a lot of business models, and the more money there is that's flowing, and the more that those decisions are driven by information, the more money you can make. So that's why what's so enticing about this, you know, revealing the true picture of internet access in New York.
Which we could do, right?
Is what would happen is, my belief, is that it would facilitate a movement of people on the island of Manhattan to up the rents in the places where the internet access is better. Once people know where the internet access is better, there's going to be more competition to rent the apartments there, which will create the incentive for the landlords in the areas that don't have. Now they're seeing, by the way, and this is a time where demand in apartments is actually pretty low, and so they're making a lot of deals. You know, it's an amazing time to actually take out a lease because you get a great deal. So what you would find is that the rents would get depressed where the internet access is bad, right, and would go up in the places where it's good. And then that would create the incentive for the places with bad to get good. And all of a sudden now you find that, you know, there's a dynamic to the market where people don't believe it can change because everything's all locked in. This is the famous word in the internet called disruption. You know, and sometimes disruption, you know, the news industry, if it wants to get in on this game, it has to be willing to do some of it.
Well, information is disruptive.
It can be.
Sometimes, right kind of information.
And in the pharmaceuticals, is another perfect example for this, okay?
Right.
You know, if I can go through mail order and buy my prescription drugs through a pharmacy in Andorra, okay, if it turns out that for whatever reason drugs cost one quarter, I don't even need insurance in the United States,
right?
If the, you know, if the cost is so low over there, I can cancel my pharmaceutical insurance over here, which is something, you know, it could be incredibly disruptive.
That's right.
To have that. And then obviously the laws have to change a little bit too to allow people to do
things.
But
first we have to know what's going on.
There's no question that we have to know what's going on. That might be the anthem for the rebooted new system for the new economy.
Yeah.
Is that we need, you know, look at how much trouble we get into when we don't know what's going on.
You know, I had another take on the business model question, and I tried to make this point at TED, is if you're focused exclusively on where's the money going to come from, where's the money going to come from,
right,
where's the money
going to
come from, you may miss the fact that costs are falling in a lot of areas that are relevant to journalism.
Yes.
And so part of the challenge is to take advantage of the plummeting costs and produce very high quality synthesized information at a very low cost, because then you can still deliver something of real value without the huge revenues, many of which are not coming back, as anybody who's studied the ecosystem.
It's what
knows.
Mark Andreessen says, you know, burn the boats, for crying out loud. Stop trying to recreate the old model and, you know, embrace the world that you live in and be excited by it, you know?
And we are.
Absolutely.
Totally.
It's very frustrating, you know. It's like in football. I'm not a big football fan, but, you know, we just had this wonderful, the New Orleans Saints win, so it's like, what a great season it was. Oh, you know, when the quarterback gets the ball, the quarterback always turns back and runs a few yards back, okay, before even thinking about passing the ball. And you'd think, well, why is the quarterback doing that? He's giving up yardage. I mean, this he's running the wrong way. Well, he does it to buy himself a little bit of room so he can see what's out there, right? So if in the news industry, they're never willing to do that. They're always standing right at the scrimmage line, not budging an inch. And, of course, what happens is they get tackled every goddamn time, and they never get to throw the ball. You know, what you need inside these news organizations, Jay, is, I know this, you never hear it, but you need people who love news and aren't scared by news, who think that news is the greatest thing that God ever invented, right? And a person who really, really, really loves news. And by the way, I'm not saying that there aren't a lot of people at these organizations
that do. I think
there are. Absolutely. But they've got their heads. It's like if you think your way towards dancing, you don't do any dancing, okay? You know, the secret to dancing is to just, you know, try to look stupid. You know, instead of worrying about looking stupid, the trick is to try to look stupid. Right, right. Get out there and make a fool of yourself. And sooner or later, you're going to be dancing, right? So if you really love news, then what you have to do is you have to start acting that way. And you have to start doing things that are just wonderful for news. Why? I know I've said this before on this podcast, but it's got to be said over and over again because it's so important. Is that just go have fun. It's a great time to be alive. The news, we've got these phenomenal networks that make news work so much better than it ever has before. It's what a wonderful time to be in the news business this is.
That's what we're hoping to spread to students and people in the East Village.
I think
with
it's
this
beginning
project.
To happen, actually. I sense that. You know, I went to talk to a journalism class at Stanford about 10 years ago, and maybe even a little bit more. And what surprised me was how conservative the students were. You know, how they only wanted to hear about, you know, they brought me in to talk about blogging, right? I mean,
conservative, you know, about journalism. Yeah,
absolutely.
That has always been the case in journalism school. Yes.
I find that the students here, maybe it's because of the Studio 20 program, but they're not quite so.
We're making progress.
Yeah, I think that when the site actually goes live and, you know, the daily deadlines start, you know, coming and whatever, maybe we can get a little bit of, like, relaxation to happen and, you know, stop thinking about the big, you know, magazine piece, but rather let's go get a brilliant story. And that really, I love this idea, by the way, of doing the study of internet access in the East Village as a microcosm of this.
I think it's totally doable, and we should start working on it. Let's move on to some of the
audience. Wait, before we do that, it seems like that's something we could do with the computer science people too.
Totally.
Yeah. So let's put that on the list.
You had real-time search as one of the items you wanted to talk about, so let's go into that.
This was something that that was observable almost immediately after Google did its deal with Twitter. There was a day when Google and Microsoft both announced
had
done a deal. I forget who went first. I think Microsoft went first.
Microsoft did. And then Google said, we have something too. Yeah.
Right, exactly. It's like, you know, Microsoft had about 5 minutes of, wow, Microsoft got a deal, you know, and then, of course, Google got one too. And so I don't know all of what they're doing with this at Google, but I do know one thing that they're doing with it is that there's this alert system, Google Alerts. And do you not use this?
I do use it, yeah.
Okay, the idea is that you you program Google.
Yeah, to tell certain.
Right, you program it, like I'm sure you have one that says Jay Rosen, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have one that says Dave Weiner. I also have one that says RSS. You know, the things that I have an interest in professionally and personally.
I have one East Village.
There you go. Okay. So these stopped being useful shortly after they did the deal with Twitter because they were returning hits whenever somebody mentioned my name or RSS or whatever on Twitter.
Mm.
And
we already know that.
We already know what?
Well, that was redundant information. Isn't that what you're saying?
No.
No.
No, because it would find hits that I wouldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes people spell out your name, Dave mm-hmm. space Weiner, instead of at sign Dave Weiner, right? In your case, J space Rosen instead of at sign J Rosen underscore NYU. But the problem is that, first of all, there's too much of that. Second of all, each of them is 140 characters. So guess what? There's almost no information conveyed in these things because that's the way it goes, right? 140 characters, you know, you can almost overlook it when it's in your tweet stream. But when it starts showing up in this space, all of a sudden, it's not such a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, it you'd kind of like to tune it out.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, what got me to write about this is that I've noticed this, and I was planning on at some point writing about it. Just give it a chance to sink in. Maybe they'll tweak it. Maybe they'll fix it. Maybe somehow it'll become more relevant. So I didn't want to like pass judgment right away, right? Let it sit there for a little while. But then there was a study that was announced, and it was written up on a lot of tech blogs. They have a technique for measuring attention by users on websites. And what they do is they put glasses on the subject, right? And as you're reading the web page, it tracks where your pupil is pointed, okay? So it knows what you're reading on the web page. And as you do it, it creates an interactive map of all the places that you looked at, right? And so where do you do this? You do this on search, right, on Google. So if you're searching for something, they want to know which of the different things did you pay attention to? How mm-hmm. much attention did you put on the ads?
Right.
You know, whatever. Turns out nobody looks at the real-time results. So dramatic results came out of this experiment.
Hmm.
Because they also included these real-time results in the search results
right.
on Google. So the question comes up is, okay, if Twitter is basing their revenue model, and we believe they are basing their revenue model on advertising on search of tweets. Do you understand? So, in other words, searching
right.
tweets and then ads being
the
associated
with
it.
The assumption is that it's valuable.
Correct. And that assumption
may not be true.
Correct. That's mm-hmm. right. The assumption may not be true.
Right.
That's the observation. Whether it turns out that way or not, or whether they have other data that indicates otherwise, who knows? My guess, though, is that it's probably not going to be all that valuable.
Hmm.
I didn't hear anybody contradict it to say that
that could very well be
that they get a lot of value out of searching tweets. I think in the early days, people thought they might someday get a lot of value out of it. But at some point, at some number of years into it, you have to say, well, either the potential was realized or it wasn't.
Right.
We may be at that point. That's all.
All right. Very cool. I see where you're going with that. And I noticed that in my own searches. They also have introduced something that's called social search.
Yeah. That I like, actually.
Yeah, and I kind of see where they're going with that one.
Yeah.
Because people who are important to me in my network, when they have something on a term I've searched on,
right.
it starts to glitter a little bit in the results.
Well, you know how to evaluate that particular
Yeah, and I know
source.
This person, right.
Right.
So that's kind of
Maybe
valuable.
You'll run into them in the hall someday and one day and say, I saw that you had written this thing about this particular subject and, and ask for some, it seems relevant. That one I like a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that may be the value, of course, of the social networks right there. It might be enough.
It could be.
But Facebook is better positioned for that than anybody in this business.
Speaking of that, as you know, I started blogging again at PressThink. And so I'm looking again at my referral logs to see where traffic is coming to PressThink, which is something I've always done as a blogger just to understand where readers are coming from. And just as I noticed 2 years ago that Twitter was becoming a huge source of referrals, and that's one of the reasons that I decided that I had to study Twitter for a few months and then get on it, because I, especially when you linked to me on Twitter, I noticed a huge amount of traffic was coming from there, and that got my attention. Now it's Facebook, a lot of referrals from Facebook.
Facebook's gotten a lot better lately.
I don't know what it is, but it's driving traffic for sure.
They've been tweaking. They got a lot of ideas from the friend feed guys.
Yeah.
Or at least it appears that way.
That's what appears to me, too.
And it's more interesting and it's more useful. And they're getting their hooks into more things.
Yep.
And as they do that, and because they start with a base, I mean, they're more traffic now than Google. They're generating more traffic.
They're huge.
90 seconds.
What is Apple up to?
Well, we only have 90 seconds left, so it's kind of hard to answer the question. Maybe I can try in a very abbreviated fashion. The question came from why are they picking this huge fight with Flash? And this is almost... not necessarily the topic of the day today, but it was a couple of weeks ago.
60 seconds.
And they say the reason is that the Flash people are lazy and Flash is slow and buggy. And I don't think so. Honestly, don't think. That's like a Republican saying Democrats are lazy. There might be something else going on there. Like they want to win the election. I think what Apple is up to is trying to control the content flow. And I think they have very big ambitions. And so you should expect to see a lot more things like this where they cut off different ways for content and applications to reach users so they can put a tariff on it. And
so they want to be the new bottleneck?
they are rapidly turning into that, and there aren't going to be that many ways to get around
seconds.
Them. Anyway, we're out of time. It was a great show, Jay. Thanks so much.
Dave, thanks for coming in.
Right on. Yep.